opposite of me, we're just talking about it. So it's the longest tenured coach in Austrian league history, at the very least, the time frame that we were able to go back to. Dave McQueen, you have to be the longest tenured coach since, at the very least, the early 90s, late 80s. 7 years in Dornbirn, tied with your longest stint as a coach back from the OHL days. But unfortunately, those 7 years have come to an end. First of all, very glad that you're joining us for kind of an exit interview. First question has to be, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine. It's always tough when you leave somewhere, but all honesty, myself and my family have been treated very well here, and we've made some good friends. So, there's no hard feelings. We're leaving on good terms, but yeah, it'll be when I do end up flying out of here, it'll be a sad day.
How did the probably exit meeting as well with Alex Kutzer go? Could you lead me through that as well?
I'm sure we're going to get together again, maybe over lunch or dinner or something, but we have had a couple pretty in-depth talks in the office, and no surprises. It's just after 7 years, it's time. It's time for maybe a new voice, a new direction. I know you hear that all the time, but I guess those are the cliches that organizations use. But he walked me through the process, some of the decisions. It was a very cordial talk. Alex and I have developed a relationship over 7 years, obviously, and I got to know him and his family very well, as he did with mine. So there was no, like I said, no surprises, just a lot of honesty, and at the end of the day, we'll wish each other luck and move on.
Now, the new direction that obviously every club wants to head into after a head coach, what do you think did the club lack or miss, or what kind of direction could that be?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. I'm not sure. I'm not sure I'm in the position to say what direction they're going to head. I know a lot of it's going to depend on the new rules. A lot of it depend on who the new coach is, what kind of style that they end up playing. I know the style that we like to try and play here and compete. But I think at the end of the day, for this team to move forward and this organization to move forward, they're going to need a lot of maybe a little more support from the people that are in charge of this area. There's a lot of things here that could be done a lot more professional. I know the facilities that the soccer teams get sometimes, and I look around, and coming from North America, where the coaches' offices are just as about as big as a player's dressing room, because you have meetings with players, and you have TVs and your video equipment all inside the coach's office. And just here in Dornbirn, those facilities aren't available, and things like coming back off the road from a qualification game in Zanaimo, having to play on Sunday, and we don't have a gym to go to because they have to take the equipment out of the gym. And there's no place to do a proper regeneration. My first year here, we didn't have a full-time athletic therapist. Now that has changed. Obviously, that's an organizational decision, and that's something that happens. But when you're doing therapy and you've got a little cabin at the end of the hallway, with six or seven guys that need to get in there. So I think for me, to move forward, in a different direction, the support of the people that make those decisions to make this a much more professional atmosphere, in the surroundings, in the dressing rooms, the coaches' office, the therapy rooms, the gyms, is something that a step that needs to be made.
You've already pointed out a lot of things and also how it developed over the years. I remember talking to Alex Kutzer a couple of months back, and he told me that when Dortmund entered the league, there were promises made on a obviously very loose basis that there could be a second rink. Now, obviously, next door, that rink never really manifested. Would a second rink have helped? Would a second rink been beneficial for probably setting up a proper juniors program as well?
Absolutely. And, you know, I know, again, I compare things to North America, and I know it's a different dynamics over here sometimes, but to have a second rink, a simple thing, like if I want to bring the team down in the afternoon to work on the power play or something, we just didn't have the ice time. You know, our ice time was the same every day, which was fine. And you know, the ice meister here was great. We worked together well, but in order, you need ice accessible for when you need it. Again, if you don't have a proper facility to regenerate off the ice, to be able to come back, again, I'll use the example of Zanaimo in the qualification round, coming back at 5 o'clock in the morning, and maybe we go on the ice at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Not possible, because, you know, the youth programs or the men's league or whatever, and especially since the outdoor rink was shut down this year, made it a lot more difficult. But my last job in North America, we had a second rink right next door. So if we couldn't get on the big ice surface, we put our gear on and walk next door, go on the little ice surface. So, you know, it's a huge advantage, obviously, to have that accessible to you at any time.
I started this podcast by, well, talking a little bit about your tenure. If your coaching tenure here were to be a child, it would be already going to school. So 7 years is a very long time. So let's rewind the time a little bit. How did you first get in touch with the head coaching job in Dornbirn?
Well, that's a funny story. A friend of mine back home who was involved with the Salzburg organization and Pierre Paget, this friend was going to be my player agent when I was still playing in junior. And then he called me right near the, probably 2 or 3 months before the draft, and says, "Dave, sorry, I'm getting out of the agent business. I'm going to be a sports psychologist." So the story goes on. Kind of lost touch with him a little bit. When I was in between jobs, I'd go to a lot of games, junior games, just doing some networking. I ran into him again, and he said, "Hey, might be an opportunity in Austria." And I said, "Austria? Come on. Like, what? You know, I didn't know they had hockey in Austria." So he told me the story about Salzburg and his relationship with Pierre, who I knew very well. And he put me in contact with Alex. And basically, phone call after phone call. But the funny thing, you know, the translation, you know, Alex was learning the English and a lot got lost in translation over the phone. And I can remember it like it was yesterday. I'd get off the phone and I'd go to my wife and says, "Looks like we're going to Austria." Next couple of days later, I get off the phone and says, "I don't think we're going to Austria." And this went on for, probably a month and a half. And finally, you know, I guess Alex was doing his due diligence and checking things out and other probably candidates and everything. And finally, he offered me the job, and, you know, we started building a team, I think, probably around the end of June that year.
So you come in here, you are building a program from scratch. Was there ever a point where you thought, what the have I got myself into?
Well, there. Going back to the facilities, when I first walked in, I didn't know really what to expect. I had done some homework, obviously, once I got my once I got the job, I had talked to some colleagues over here that were coaching, not necessarily in Austria, but coaching in Europe, just to kind of get their feelings. And then I come here, and you gotta picture this, okay? The junior leagues in Canada are not like the junior leagues over here. They are the next step to the National Hockey League. You know, guys like Steven Stamkos, Alex Galchenyuk, now Yakupov, you know, all these guys. I'd name some guys, but people probably wouldn't recognize their names because they're retired now. But, you know, I'm coming, and those organizations are so professional. It's a mini NHL over there. And, you know, I'm coming out of an office with a big screen TV, all my video equipment, my laptop, a couch, four or five chairs so I can have meetings with players and everything. And I walk into, Alex shows me, you know, the dressing room and the office here. And I go, this isn't the office. This is just where I put my stuff on, right? And he goes, no, this is your office. And I go, well, how many? He goes, well, there could be three or four people in here. I go, okay, I guess I probably won't be doing much work at the rink. And, you know, so, but I was open. I understood that, you know, they were just starting out and hopefully things would change a little bit. And you know, Alex worked hard and things did change quite a bit from my first year. But there was times when I'm sitting back going, wow, I've hit the big time now.
Would you say it's your biggest adventure that you ever undertook?
Oh, absolutely. And it was, you know what, I'm not a guy that, and this is going to sound funny because coaches, we travel everywhere and we're in one spot for a couple of years, then another spot for a couple of years, and you're uprooting your family and everything. But I had made a trip, a friend of mine in Sarnia, they're from just outside of Zurich in Kuznak, and they have family there. And when I was between jobs, he says, go over to Switzerland. You can live with my family over there. I think Bob Hartley was the coach in Zurich at the time who I knew, and we arranged a lunch to have with him. And Sean Simpson was the national team coach, and I played with Sean. So I went to DeVos with him, and, you know, I said, why not go over, kind of find out what the hockey's like. And it was way outside my comfort zone. Like, my wife could walk into a room and she'll have 10 friends within 30 minutes. I'll walk into a room and I'll stand in the corner and not talk to anybody. So yeah, when I came over here, it was a little bit outside my comfort zone. But the great thing about this game is once the players start arriving and families and everything, you automatically have 20 to 30 people that you can converse with every day.
Now, a lot of people have come, a lot of people have gone, players, obviously assistants, obviously people near and dear to the program. I've also included some questions from like a fan forum, or from like a place where people can post on the internet, and they wanted to know what your biggest success on the personnel market was, and also your biggest failure.
Well, you know, I don't know that.
Failure is probably a little too.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to say a failure, but you know what? We all make mistakes, and when you're recruiting so many players year after year, you're going to make mistakes. And I remember telling Alex that the first year, I said, we're going to make a lot of mistakes, just like every organization does. And, you know, there was some poor decisions, but not through lack of effort, not through lack of doing our homework. Things just didn't work out. But, you know, some of the players that we brought in weren't maybe the type of players that we thought we were getting at the time. And that's unfortunate. But, you know, when we talk about success, obviously,
I'll narrow it down. A signing that you're very proud of, where you think, "Wow, this kind of exceeded my expectations."
Well, you know, I think there's probably a few of those guys that came in. You know, Matt Fraser being one of them. Matt Fraser being one of them. Kyle Greentree, another one. I really enjoy Graham Mink when he was here. I think that year our power play was at about 27-28%, and a lot of it was because of him. So the players that have come through here, but you know, I'm just as proud of some of the, and obviously I'm just talking about imports right now. I can get to the Austrians in a minute, but I'm just as proud of guys like Adam Dennis, who was our goaltender, led us into the playoffs against Salzburg 4 or 5 years ago. He's gone on back to North America and now is an assistant coach in the best junior league in the world. So guys that have gone back, and you know, Kyle Greentree is now a firefighter in Vancouver. I still get phone calls from him. He wanted to use me as a reference. So guys that, which is why you try and bring in the right people. You bring in the right people, and you're just as happy when they have success away from the game as the guys that have come here, moved on after a year or two, and had success still playing in Europe.
Now, in the end, your tally totals up to 393 games played. Are you a numbers guy, or is it just a statistic that the media people like to use?
I'm not really a numbers guy. Obviously, you know, after 7 years, and you know, math was one of my better subjects in school, so I can do the math pretty quickly. But you know what? That just 7 years, it just means I'm getting a little bit older.
You're seventh all-time in wins, winning 173 games, but you're also second all-time in losses with 220. Is there a game that particularly stands out, either win or loss, in those 7 years or from those 393 games?
Wow, that's a great question. I can remember, it might have been against Graz 4 or 5 years ago. We were down by 4 or 5 going into the third period. I think we came back and won 8-6, 8-5, something like that. That was unbelievable. But also, I remember playing against Salzburg in this rink, standing room only, and the atmosphere was electric. And that's what really stands out when the fans do come out and they support these guys. And you know, I know it was Salzburg, I think it was a playoff game. I also believe we beat them 2-0, and I think I said after the game, when's the last time anybody shut out Salzburg? There's a lot of games that when I do sit back and reflect on it, I'll go, wow, that was pretty special. And you know what also was pretty cool was our outdoor game in Ljubljana. Even though, you know, Ljubljana wasn't a team that was, you know, highly regarded anyways, they did a phenomenal job with that outdoor game. And it was really cool because coming from North America, they have them all the time. And that was really cool to be a part of.
I very vividly remember that one game against Graz that you mentioned first. You were down 1-5, and I produced it at the truck. And at that time, during the second period, we were looking for like filler stuff. So, damn, we got an entire intermission to fill. And then we got a third period with nothing to talk about because it looked like a runaway victory. And then you guys turned the page and won 8-6. I very, very vividly remember that. But what I actually wanted to get that is your relationship with the media. The very first time I got to know you and was able to work with you, you're like, okay, you can do everything you want. And now there's a group of people that probably a little more buttoned up and restrictive in their approach to the media. How come did you have such a, call it loose and very, very open-minded approach with the media?
Well, one thing that I try to do with the media, and obviously in the 27 years I've been coaching and obviously playing, you deal with all kinds of different types. And one thing I preach to my players and any organization I'm in is honesty and trust. And if I can't live by that code, then how do I expect my players to live by that code. And I will generally sit down with all print media, TV media at the start and say, listen, I will give you guys as much background information off the record so you have an understanding of what happens behind the scenes, because 80% of it's behind the scenes. They only see the finished product on the ice. And I also say, until you stab me in the back. And if somebody stabs me in the back, then I'm pretty much done with that person. And I enjoy the media. You guys have a job to do. I have a job to do. And I think if I have a saying, you want respect, show respect. I think if I respect what the media does, they might respect what I'm trying to do. And we can have a very, very cordial relationship. Plus, I want people to know that I'm human. You know, I'm not this grumpy, no smile guy that people see after a loss or on the bench sometimes. I'm human. I have a family. I enjoy life, and it's too short to go around not trying to get along with everybody that's just trying to do their job.
How tough is it to go out after this season of hell? I mean, it started with an ACL tear to Rob Bortson in training camp. Injuries added up, couple of imports didn't necessarily work out. How's that feeling to go out after the season?
Honestly, it sucks. It sucks. You know, when we put this team together, we really felt that we had a legitimate chance to, you know, get into the top six. And I've said to many people since it's happened, this year was the perfect storm. Whatever could go wrong, went wrong. I give our guys a lot of credit after we had that bad stretch that we didn't win a game in regulation for 9. But you know, we battled after that, and we found ways to win hockey games. And that's a credit to some of the guys that we brought in. But you know, when you look back at our season, I think I counted up almost 127 man games lost through injuries, not including Bortson. So that's another 54 games if you want to add him in. But we never, when you build a team, you put down a potential lineup, and we never really had our projected lineup on the ice at all. And I know a lot of people say, well, you played with 14 imports. No, we played with 9 or 10 most of the year, you know, with all the injuries. And it wasn't anything that you could say, could you have prevented? Like, you can't prevent Bortson's injury. You can't prevent Broda's shoulder. Matsy blocks a shot. He's out for 2 months. You can't prevent that. Chip, you know, a freaking accident in the corner, he's done for the year. Like, it just went on and on and on. And then, to cap off the book I'm going to write, the final chapter's going to be a dog bites one of my best defenseman's hand in a critical time of the year, and he's done for the year. You can't make this stuff up. And, you know, now I can sit back and go, wow, like, just, how does that happen? But it does. And I know everyone deals with injuries. It's just the long-term injuries that we had. And, you know, most nights playing shorthanded and only having 3 lines and you know, 5-6 defensemen. And then our goaltender. Look at our goaltenders this year. You know, you can only have so many goaltenders in a year. And, you know, Erasmus gets hurt at a critical time. We brought in Svoboda, who was fine. But, you know, he wasn't Rasmus.
Because the people I asked to kind of post some questions or give me some input, they were wondering if Stroy was the right choice as a backup from the get-go, because it didn't always seem as if he was like your first choice.
Well, whether he was the first choice or he wasn't, your options are limited. When we first brought Stroy in a few years ago, I thought, because Peter Svorkowicz was my assistant coach, and he was a goaltender in the National Hockey League and a goaltender coach, and we talked, and we thought that, you know, if his work ethic improved and he could stay healthy, that he would have a chance to progress like David Madlener did. And this year, I had every intentions of giving him some games. We had a new goalie coach this year that was working with them, but, you know, he gets hurt. You know, he was out for 2 months, and then he gets a virus, then he's sick, you know, and there was just never an opportunity for him to get in the proper game shape. Like, he wasn't even playing in Bregenz of all, which was the plan, to give him some experience there and see if he was capable of being a legitimate backup at this level. So due to circumstances, again, injuries, sicknesses, not being able to practice, not being able to get in professional shape that you need to be at this level, it just didn't work, no.
Two last questions, like from the fans' perspective. One is the cooperation with Bregenz of Alt. Obviously, a lot of young guys that eventually filled your roster came from Bregenz of Alt. How, over the years, has that cooperation developed and worked for you?
You know what? It's a great tool to have. Obviously, you use that cooperation to develop your young players. It would be great if they could practice and play with us a little bit more, but a lot of these young players are going to school. A lot of them have jobs. A guy like Pushman was in the Army till the end of October. So, you know, for him to get up to speed and get in shape to play at our level it was very difficult. But I think developing the players, us giving them a certain amount of players that need to play kind of on their top two lines, get some power play time, get some penalty killing time, to give them situations that they're not going to have in the EBL right at the start, and get them experience. And that's what that program is used for, to develop them, to get them into those situations. The problem certainly this year became, if we took all those young guys from Bregenz of Alt when we had injuries, Bregenz of Alt wouldn't have a lineup. They couldn't put a team on the ice. So it was a juggling act between, you know, the young guys not being able to practice or play with us because of job commitments, school, army commitments, things like that. So between that and making sure Bregenz of Alt could ice a full lineup, it was a very difficult situation. Now, over Christmas, when kind of the schedules didn't align as much, we could get them to practice with us. But some of these young guys, because I wanted them to practice with us, some of these young guys were practicing with us in the morning, practicing with Bregenz of Alt at night. I needed a full lineup for practice the next day, and then they play with Bregenz of Alt the following night. And they can't do that. That's too much. So, you know, it's a great thing to have, to be able to put players there, but you also have to be aware that they need to ice the lineup too.
Second part of the question about Bregenz of Alt, did it cross your mind at the very last game in Innsbruck that ended your season to play Felix Beck in the goal?
It did. You know, for me, you want to, like, Rasmus was with us all year, so you want to give him an opportunity to play, you know, possibly his last game. As it turns out, he's probably coming back. I think he's got a contract, but for me, a young goaltender like Beck, he needs to develop. And I felt the ideal situation would have been to get him some minutes earlier in the year. We never were in a position to be able to do that because we were fighting for our life every night. But I did not want to destroy a young goaltender that has the potential to be a, you know, a pretty good goaltender. I believe, you know, I hope he grows a little bit because this level is totally different than the Bregenz of all level, obviously. But if he went in for a whole game and Innsbruck could score and they lit him up and they got who knows how many goals on him, that could have a huge impact on his psychological and mental part and mental game. You know, when Rasmus came to the bench, he had to get the iron fixed on his skate. I got him in there, you know, but it wasn't for very long, and I didn't want to give him the chance or the opportunity to harm his development, because from what I understood, he played very well in Bregenz of all most of the year, and that was a decision that I consciously made. Not for me, not for the Dornbirn Bulldogs. I did it to protect him.
After it got known that you won't be back with the club, some rumors started circling that you might be back as a scout or as a consultant. Can you confirm these rumors?
There was never... I don't think that was ever the plan. There was never a job offer given to me, and I didn't expect one. If you're gonna go with a new direction and new people, I think you've got to just cut ties. What I have offered Alex, because we do have a good relationship, and he's treated myself very well in 7 years. He knows I've got a lot of contacts, and when I'm at home, I don't know who he's bringing in to coach. Maybe they got their own networking contact lists, but if he wants any information on players, wants me to call a scout or some of my contacts to find out for him, I said I'd be more than happy to. You know, I want to leave here on a good relationship, and I think Alex understands that I do have a lot of people back home I can talk to and maybe potentially help him out, at least getting him some information.
Now, as you can probably watch from afar, the next year is going to be a very interesting one, because obviously the Fabio Felker has put in its intentions to join the league. The players' market, especially the Austrian one, is not going to be a whole lot bigger than it is already. Teams have to cut down on import players. What do you think are going to be the challenges for Dornbirn, especially regarding that Fabio might join the league?
Well, I think you could also even include Innsbruck in that circle. You know, there's three, could potentially be three teams here within 2 hours of each other, and all fighting for the same, you know, trying to pick those players out of the same pool. It's no secret that, the Salzburgs, the Viennas, the Klagenfurts are going to get their Austrians. I don't think that's ever going to change. So it will, I guess it depends on how you want to build your team. If it goes down to 11 imports, obviously you want to, you're probably going to have an import goaltender. Do you want 6 import forwards, 4 import defensemen, or do you go 5 and 5? Those are all decisions that Alex and, you know, the new coach are going to have to make. But it's going to be a challenge. It will be a challenge. I think there's some guys in Bregenz of all that, if they have big summers, could play a role as Austrians in this league. I don't know about Matze House, if what their plans are, but they certainly, that's something that I'm very proud of. They're legitimate third line players at this level, and with the ability to move up in the lineup if you get some injuries and stuff. So, you know, those are guys that you're going to have to come probably go after pretty hard to make sure that you've got enough legitimate players at the EBL level to be competitive.
I'll leave it at the outlook or this outlook on to next year, since it's gotten to know that you've been relieved of your duties, a lot of people you told me before this have reached out to you. Which one person that might have called you or texted you surprised you the most?
Wow. I don't know that there's really any surprises. Probably.
Which one made you go, okay, that's very nice?
Yeah, probably just one of my best friends from back home, because they have to obviously decipher the language, find out what's going on, and just, you know, he's been through this with me before. And simple question: how are you? Are you getting through it? When are you coming home? Let's get together. So, yeah.
The normal stuff.
Yeah,
I'd say. But you've already gotten back on working the phones. What's the outlook for the next couple of weeks, next couple of months? Where do you see yourself, hopefully, in September, August?
Well, where I see myself is hopefully behind a bench coaching. You know, I'm literally, Martin, I'm open to do anything. Obviously, I want to coach. I still think I've got some good years left. I love being in that heat of the moment, the battle. I love the camaraderie with the players. So, you know, I'm working the phones. You know, I learned a long time ago in this business, your phone's probably not going to ring just because you want it to. So you have to put the work in. And I see myself staying in Europe. And again, I'll look at any situation that, you know, I feel is a good situation for myself and my family. And again, that goes back to working with professional people. Maybe have a chance to win. And, I enjoy what I'm doing, and I'm hoping that it continues.
Now, your flight's scheduled for the next couple of days. You fly back to Canada. What thing from maybe, or what uniquely Fallbergian thing product might be on that plane with you?
Well, we love the cheese here. And my wife, when I talk to her, says, if you can throw some cheese in. The problem with that is I've got to remember when I get to Toronto to declare it. Because it always says on your custom sheet, are you bringing any dairy products in? Have you visited any farms? And I just forget that I have cheese. And I always say no. And if they open it up, then I don't know. They're probably going to go through my bag and all that. So, you know what? After 7 years, I've accumulated a lot of stuff here. I sent a box home the other day. I'm going to keep some stuff here, hoping to be back in Europe. But, yeah, if there's one thing that will probably end up at the top of my suitcase, it'll be some cheese.
Good choice. I do understand it very well. We're talking about the games and all the experiences at the rink, around the rink. But apart from all things hockey, what's the, I'd say, most cherished memory from those 7 years that you will take back to Canada and hopefully back again to Europe?
You know what? I told somebody this the other day, and in North America, it is so go, 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 go. It's 24/7. It's Sundays. It's you get up, you drive through Tim Hortons, grab your coffee, you drink it on the way to work, and you get to work, and then you have another coffee, and you're working away, and then you get up and you do the same thing again the next day. You walk down the street, people actually will grab their phone and make it look like they're talking on the phone so they don't have to say hi to you. Like, you know, I found, and my wife said this, day one, that, you know, we'd be walking down the street, and doesn't matter if it was a child, a 7-8 year old child, or a 30 year old person you meet walking in the mountains, they always said hi. And that was pretty cool for us, you know, and didn't know you from a hole in the ground, but we found it to be very, very friendly. You know, so that and just the, I don't want to say laid back, because I know people over here work extremely hard. I've seen it. I know that. But to be able to walk down to the market on a Saturday, Sunday, and people aren't sitting in their houses watching TV or on their video games. They're down having a coffee or a Prosecco or a beer, and the cafes are all full, and people just getting together and spending time with family and friends and that. That's pretty special. If there's anything I could, outside of the cheese in my suitcase, if I could take that culture back, I would.
Couldn't be any better way to end this podcast, Dave McQueen. It's been a blast having you. Those 7 years with Service TVO Corporation has always gone well. Wish you all the best for your next endeavors, and hope to have you back at some point in Europe and maybe in Jersey Bankley.
Well, Martin, to you and all your staff, it has been a pleasure. I've enjoyed it, and hey, good luck for the rest of the playoffs.
Thank you very much.